Good morning. It is Thursday, September 6th, and this is Andy Harris, and we're introducing another week of the Emunah teleconference. And I'm going to begin by sharing a little bit of something that I wrote about that you might have seen just recently. I just published a blog about an experience that just another opportunity to see more clearly after having become more cloudy about this understanding. That's just the cycle that I see going kind of, you know, in and out of understanding. But I saw in particular something that was helpful for me in life in general, and certainly in terms of anticipating change, in terms of looking forward to the opportunity of Yomim Narayim. The pasuk says, "Karov alecha hadover ma'od." After describing that the entire Torah is not far from us, it's not in the heavens, it's not across the ocean, it's very close to us. So it sounds a little bit daunting to suggest that the keeping of the entire Torah is very close to us. Almost as if it's like easy, you know, as if it's easy to keep the entire Torah. And I shared the Dubna Magid's parable, the mashal of the Dubna Magid for this, in which he describes a person who there's a beggar is walking along the street. He passes the home of a wealthy guy, and Zalman is the wealthy guy. He says to the beggar, "Fishel, if you schlep my package up the stairs into my home, I'll give you a gold coin." So he's walking up the stairs. Fishel agrees. He grabs one of the big packages and he starts schlepping it up the stairs. And he walks, you know, after tremendous exertion and heaving and huffing, he gets inside the foyer of Zalman's mansion and he calls out. He says, "Zalman, I'm here. I'm here. Where do you want me to bring this box?" So he doesn't see Zalman, but he hears a voice from down the hall, and Zalman calls out to him. He says, "Fishel, I'm so sorry. I'm afraid you brought the wrong package." So Fishel's bothered by that, after having slept and exerted himself. He says, "Well, what do you mean? What do you mean I brought the wrong package? And how do you even know? You can't even see me." So then Zalman says to him, "I know you brought the package. I don't need to see you. I can hear you. I know you brought the wrong package because my package is light." And that, the Dubna Magid, is what the Torah is telling us, is that we should know something about the nature of the job that the Almighty has asked us to do in this world. It's not easy in the sense that there's nothing to do. It's just that it's not heavy. It's not confusing. It's not remote. It's not. There's something that the nature of the job that he wants us to do is that it's light, it's accessible, it's simple. Even if there's effort and courage involved in undertaking it, and I guess part of the job is to clarify when I'm capable of doing my job, when I'm engaged in the job the Almighty has given me, and when I haven't. And that goes back to, you know, this whole conversation about how Emunah doesn't just describe the way in which the world is unfolding in the macro scale, in all the events and the hashgacha pratis of our lives, and all the details of the actions and interactions. Emunah is also inclusive of an understanding of what's happening in our own, in the inner world in which we inhabit. We inhabit an inner world. The inner world is no less real than the world that we perceive out there. On the contrary, you could suggest that it's more real. And the fact that there are times where I can look out at the world and experience to my life and the nature of my responsibilities to be just dark or hard or painful or heavy, confusing, etc., that has more to do with what's going on inside my inner world than it does with the truth of the job that we've been placed in this world to accomplish. And that's, you know, as the Gemara says, that Ein Adam Chayta Elam Keinichnas Baruach Shtus, a person doesn't transgress, a person doesn't make a mistake unless he's visited by a certain Ruach Shtus, a spirit of insanity, you know, a spirit of misunderstanding. So I shared, and I'll share again now for anyone who hasn't read the blog, I had this experience just recently in one of my interactions with my wife, where we're discussing one of our children and one of our children's needs, and there's something that there's, you know, thank God all is well, except that there's definitely room for, as in all parenting, you know, situations, there's room for intervention, there's room for ways of being helpful to help a child address certain difficulties. And my wife and I have different, you know, we have different sensibilities, and we have so much in common, thank God, and we share values and aspirations in so many ways, but there's definitely sensibilities in which we differ. And I could see that she was going in a direction that I could just feel was not so helpful, and what I saw she found to be like threatening. You know, it was like she experienced my take and my what I saw as necessary as just not helpful. And immediately I got upset. You know, I just got this strong feeling of like, oh, my mind was just racing. Like, she's resisting my understanding. I don't see where she's going as having any benefit or any meaningful benefit. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be difficulty. I'm going to be at risk of losing my composure, and I resent her for being this resistance. And it was just, my mind raced ahead, and I got upset. And I pulled back, and then I kind of, for a couple of days, was not in a very, you know, for a couple of days, I was not happy. I was frustrated. And what the good news is that I still knew, like going back to the Dubna Magid's mashal, the package that the Almighty has in store in mind for us to carry is light. And I could definitely sense that I was carrying a heavy package. Like, it was not light. And I understood that I knew enough of the truth to know that as much as it looked and felt that it was my wife or my child or a whole variety of circumstances that was arousing my feeling of frustration and resentment, I kind of knew that it's just not true. You know, it can't be that way. And I was somewhat relieved of the responsibility to figure out how I was going to bridge the gap between my wife and I, how we were going to somehow find a path forward regarding our child's needs. I was relieved of that. I was still upset. It wasn't like I didn't feel the feelings of annoyance and upset. But I knew that it's just not the direction. It's not the package to look at and try and figure out. And so I kind of went on my way, you know, trying to be nice and be cordial and helpful. And, you know, I wasn't Mr. Warm, but I was, you know, I was free to just kind of walk through a little bit of a stormy patch. And then I don't know if it was a couple days later that, you know, I could feel that she had somehow shifted and I had somehow shifted, and we ended up having a conversation, and I'm very grateful that I apologized and she expressed her regrets, and we just reaffirmed the fact that our desire is to prioritize a relationship where we want a warm feeling between us. We want a respectful outlook between us. That's what we want. And we also acknowledged, each of us, that we're capable of losing sight of that, but that it's not the marriage, it's not the relationship, it's not the other. It's, for me, it's not her and her deficiencies that's really the source of that. I'm grateful that I was able to accept responsibility and take away, whereas I had assigned her responsibility, I had totally kind of placed the responsibility of my upset feelings on her and her way of thinking and her mistake and this and that. I was, you know, I had all that time that I was stewing, I still had a foot in the door of truth. And then when I settled down, I was able to affirm that and state it openly. Like, I just want you to know, this is really, I understand this. I'm sorry that you have felt the effect of my storm. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to see it more clearly sooner. I'm totally committed to responsibility in this area, and I'm just letting you know, this is what I want. I want us to have a warm and respectful space between us, and I'm also aware that there will be times where each of us has that less in view, you know. And it was very meaningful, because it almost, in a certain sense, for me, it almost deepened the feeling of connection that we could encounter what looked and felt like a real pitfall, you know. Look, it really looked and felt like an incompatibility, a painful incompatibility. And then we came to see, no, that's not the way, that's not true. It's like, you know, it was like, it's like Einod Milvado, there is no other than the Almighty. Well, the way that works is you see that more deeply by first perceiving the idea of Ode. Oh, it looks like there's something other than the Almighty. And that's step one. It looks like, step one is, it looks like there's something other than the Almighty. Step two is, no. There's nothing other than the Almighty. And that first step of there is, it looks like there's something, it deepens the awareness. It deepens the understanding of the Ein Od. And that's what I feel came up in the experience of my relationship with my wife, is that it looked like there's something real that defines our marriage, called her ways of thinking and my way of thinking and her personal sensibilities and my, it looked like that. And then that fell away to the realization, like, no, there's just the two of us making, there's just us having a desire to be with each other forever, whatever that entails. And there's, of course, things that we're going to encounter along the way, but those aren't things. They're not real to our marriage. They're not real to her. They're not real to me. They're part of our human journey, and there's room. There's room in our experience of our own lives individually. There's room in the life of our marriage experience together to have those ruach shtosim, those places where we get lost. And we can understand it for ourselves. We can have understanding I can have understanding for myself and for my spouse, and she can for me. And we can, to the best of our ability, be of help to each other in a shared journey. And to me, I guess going back to the, back to the Dubna Magid, there's just, I trust that in the world the Almighty created and in the world that He placed me with a beautiful and extensive mission, I know when I'm on I know when I'm in tune with a clearer picture of His job description, when it feels lighter. It doesn't mean that I don't have, you know, challenges and real things that are needing effort and courage. It's just that we all know the difference between having a job that it feels, okay, this is a big job, but I feel settled about it. I'm present to it. I want it. I'm trusting that there's a meaningfulness to this job, and I'm really present to it. And we also know what it feels like that there's a job that it just looks scary. It just looks like overwhelming. It looks confusing and painful and dark. We know. We each of us knows the feelings associated with those two jobs. And what the Torah is reminding us of, and how the Dubna Magid is illuminating this, is that part of the job is to know that we are at times, part of our job is where we don't, is the, where the job is not in clear view, you know? That's part of the nature of our job description, is to encounter a fuzzy, unclear perception of our job. And there's room for that. And we can trust. We can trust and take heart. I mean, to me, that's really the essence of what we're doing in this conversation about the principles. And as I understand it, in the principle, in the understanding of Emunah, is that no matter how far, how much we might feel the reality of a painful, dark world, it's never really an indication or a description of the Almighty's world. It's never, we're never really encountering or feeling the world out there. We're encountering and feeling the gift of divine thought that the Almighty is showing us. He's revealing to us something. And I think back, you know, I always talk about, I love the mashal of childbirth, because the Torah tells us that the main children of our lives, the main offspring of a person's life, are his good actions, are the righteous actions that a person makes, which means that it's appropriate to look into the mashal of childbirth for an understanding of how our growth process, our journey in life, is going to work. And birth, there's only one way at this stage of the game that birth happens, and that's with contractions and dilations. That's the only way it works. And you don't, you know, a woman does not try to push the baby out during a contraction. That's not a safe time to push the baby out. You know, there are times where the job is to let the contraction pass through you, because the Almighty is causing a job to happen. He's bringing a baby into the world that is an exquisite thing. A new life, new divine life is coming into the world. And we're not managing that process. We have a role to play, but we're not the ones who are making it happen. We're a partner in it happening, and that partnership involves first and foremost understanding of what's happening and how it's not personal. And if you think about it, it's like, you know, that's what I look at what just happened with me. Is it wrong that I was reactive at the moment that my wife and I had our disagreement? Well, obviously it indicates a misunderstanding on my part. But what I'm coming to recognize is that while I'm not proud of my reaction to my wife, I'm also not particularly, I'm seeing how there's reason not to be particularly ashamed of it. You know, like it's an indication of a misunderstanding on my end. But that's why I'm here, is to discover where I'm not understanding reality. That's why I've been put in this world for this incredible, very long and involved journey to encounter what I don't understand, and then be present to how the Almighty is going to bring understanding. I don't get understanding. I don't bring babies on my own. It's the Almighty who brings new life into this world. I'm the vehicle, and I go through the contractions and the dilations, and then the gift is that I get to be I get to give birth to something new that was never in the world before. So that's the design, it seems to me. You know, after the Chet of Adam and Chava, birth before that time was very easy. It was just like, you know, there was no 9 months, and there was no difficult labor, and there was just babies, you know. But after that mistake, where the Yetzirah resides inside of us in a way that is not totally noticeable to us, there's a beautiful tikkun that we're engaged in. There's a beautiful, somewhat mysterious way in which we're capable of getting lost and not noticing that we're getting lost. And then when we encounter the pain of living in a lost state of mind, it's a wake-up call to step back and invite, you know, and step back and become more interested in the limits of my abilities, the limits of my perceptions, and thereby make room for the Almighty. And that, you know, that to me is what's underlying this that understanding is really kind of at the root of this. It's just an opportunity, again, I guess just to see that, like, I'm not proud of those moments where I act crazy, but I also realize it's the shame of those moments. If I associate shame with them, ironically, that kind of keeps me attached to them. That inhibits my ability to look to the Almighty and say, wait a second, this is the only one place where understanding is going to come from, and this is the human experience. I'm open. I'm ready. Let's go. Bring it when you're ready, the Almighty. You know, and the contraction is accomplishing something while it's unfolding. I can be in this contraction. I don't need to go somewhere. I don't need to fix or change the contraction. I'm here. Okay, those are my thoughts for this week. And as is the format, as we've done in the past, I like to share something for the first 15, 20 minutes or so. And then I like to open it up. I'd love to hear what are you seeing in your experience of the Almighty showing you something, or alternatively, where are you wondering or having experience of a question mark? That's what makes this forum, I think, special. I think I see somebody looking to comment, but I'm not sure. Okay. Well, we don't need comments. I could keep talking. But
hey, Rabbi.
Yes.
Hi, it's Chaya Parkoff in Denver.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, thank God. And I'm so glad I saw your email and so that I can get on this morning. And I love that story that you just shared. And I guess what comes to mind for me is how, you know, like sometimes we hear life is not happening to us, it's happening through us. And
okay.
That God is working, you know, bringing this through me. And, you know, my experience is that is that there is always something new kind of coming through. And sometimes I see, sometimes I get caught up and I don't see that that's what's happening. And it feels like I have to do something and it feels heavy. And yet I do suspect there, you know, I call it something fishy because I know the principles. But you know, when you're in it, you know, I can only know it insightfully. So when I don't see it insightfully, it looks heavy. It feels heavy. It feels real that it's heavy and that's something I have to do. And yet when I get the insight or when I notice, or when it happens that I get, you know, it gets lightened up for me. When I either see that it was thought in the moment, bringing my experience, or I feel different, and then I realize how that changes. Then it's obvious that, you know, that Hashem is just bringing my experience through me, and that there's always something new. So, just it's almost like for me, it's like either I see it or I don't see it.
Right.
And when I see it, it's so obvious. And when I don't see it, it just like looks, it feels so heavy. So it's just a fascinating. I guess it's just fascinating it's just fascinating to be a human being, you know, and just.
Right.
That's really what it is. It is fascinating, and I relate tremendously to, you know, whether it's my husband or my child or what have you, that sometimes it feels narrow, right? It feels meitzar. It feels, you know, that constriction, and yet that is a figment of my imagination. It's just fascinating. So those are the thoughts that came to me, and I really appreciate, you know, you sharing.
Interesting. Very nice. Yeah. I I think we can all relate. I just want to ask real quick, is that someone had messaged me saying that I'm not necessarily clear or loud, that my speaking isn't, I'm not sure. If that's the case, speak up or let me know, but I'm certainly, I'm conscious of speaking directly into the mic. Chaya, I just want to say that I like to emphasize the fact that, I think you're saying this, I'm just emphasizing it on my end, that, I for sure prefer to feel warmly toward my wife and my children, et cetera, except that what I am seeing is that, when I speak in this conference call a little bit about, the idea of mitzvot, the commandments that we're interested in fulfilling. And to know, one of our commandments is lo yeluch elohim acherim. You shall not have other gods than the Almighty, which simply understood means you shouldn't ascribe power to things other than the Almighty. And that's, and this was, by the way, Keith's teaching about the single paradigm was definitely helpful for me, very helpful to me, and kind of seeing the truth and the simple truth of this and the power of the idea that it's really a mitzvah. It's an incredible spiritual accomplishment to know that even as I'm experiencing a lot of frustration or upset, a lot, to know what I know, to know what's true and know what's not true about that is an incredible accomplishment. I mean, it's a tremendous, tremendous fulfillment of one of the six constant commandments. And I personally take, it's helpful to me personally to know that, because I can't help myself at times from falling back into a judgment about being in a low state of mind. I don't know how. There are times where I get judgmental about the fact that I'm in a not nice feeling. And of course, what's behind that judgment is the perception that I should be able to feel differently, which of course we all understand is not so. But I'm human and I still prefer it, and I still can't help but compare. He doesn't seem to be so, agitated, and he seems to be more easygoing, and why am I, so I still get judgmental about it. And when I'm able to remember and latch on to the fact that, wait a second, it doesn't matter what state of mind I'm in, what feeling state I'm in, I have a job to do. I'm first and foremost, I'm interested in serving the Almighty. That's really it. I'd love to serve the Almighty from a warm and pleasant state of mind, because of all the reasons that, one might want that. But ultimately, I take solace is the word. I don't know. I'm grateful for the fact that I have no less an exquisite job to accomplish in an upset state of mind than I do in a nice state of mind. And that to me, can be helpful in realizing just the neutral quality of feelings per se. They're information. They're telling us about how the Almighty, the nature of what the Almighty is showing me in this moment. But, and of course his closeness, but that's, something that has just been helpful to me.
Can I respond to that? Can I share
Please.
Something?
Yeah.
Beautiful. I totally relate to that. And I will tell you that I agree, the single paradigm is extremely helpful. Sometimes I get confused because I'll listen to it taught not in that way, and then I kind of go, then I start to entertain some of that, but there's too many factors. And it can be very confusing and feel like I have to do something. And the single just brings me back to and I love the single paradigm because there's only oneness, right? There's only right. oneness, only Hashem. We're an extension of that. And that and that, and so I think the single paradigm is a beautiful Torah digger way to express that logic that Hashem set up when He created us. But I will tell you that last fall, right around this time, Simchas Torah, around Rosh Hashanah, Simchas Torah, I really fell into what I'm a therapist. I will tell you, I was clinically depressed, if you want to use the DSM criteria, you know, and I just was really, really, really having a rough time. And I could point to a variety of things that might have brought thought that whatever it was, this is where I was. I just was in this place. And while I did not enjoy it, and I did not, you know, like how I felt, and what was very clear to me most of the time during that period, and I would say it lasted a few months. Obviously, I wasn't depressed every single second, but I mean, I really was I was tired, I was exhausted, I was crying a lot, I was just struggling, you know. And but what, even while I was going through that, I knew what was happening, and that I was just being visited by thought that brought these feelings. And that could only be coming from Hashem. And I could only respond to it however I could in that moment. And I'll tell you, as difficult as it was, it brought me, I learned, I gained so much tremendous compassion for myself and for others. I learned to lean in as opposed to resist where I was at. I was, and then I had a conversation with actually Rivka Krumholz, you know, and she said one thing, and she said two things, and it lifted in a way. And so was it what she said? No, it was just that I saw something in that moment. Would I have seen it any earlier? I do not believe I would have. I really feel like it was really a gift, actually. It was a gift to be able to experience that with such compassion for myself. And so I don't know, it was just very fascinating for me to just be really clear that while I wouldn't have chosen it while I was happening and I didn't enjoy it, and would I say I was clinically depressed? Yeah, if you want to use a DSM, but what I know is, I know what happened was I was feeling whatever I was thinking, and for, I could list the reasons or whatever. This is just what was coming through. And so, yes, leaning in and accepting where I am is very powerful. It's very powerful. Yeah. But it wasn't like, I got to accept where I am. It was like I insightfully saw that. And because you could beat yourself with a baseball bat doing, you know, trying to do something about the way you feel as opposed to letting it run through you. And that's, you know, talk about birthing and contractions and giving birth. You know, there was no way that was going to come out of me any sooner than it did. And it reminds me of Hashem's perfect timing, you know. And anyway, I that's all.
Well, you know, I people on this call have heard me say it, but it's just, you know, these are constant commandments, so I guess when I repeat myself, it's not for naught. But, you know, the mitzvah of Emunah is the verse in which we learn the mitzvah of Emunah is Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That's the mitzvah of Emunah. I am the Lord your God who took you out of Mitzrayim. So that means to say the context of the commandment of Emunah is in having been placed in Mitzrayim. Well, Mitzrayim was a place that we, as you said, the Meitzar, you know, that was a very constricted space. We didn't like being there, and we would have liked to have left, you know, as soon as possible, and we couldn't. And when we left, we left when the Almighty said, now it's time. That was Yetzias Mitzrayim. Is that, now what's interesting is that doesn't mean to say we don't have a role to play, you know, because if you look at it, and this is also something I've mentioned in the past, that there were Jews that didn't leave Mitzrayim. The Midrash describes that there were Jews that didn't see the pathway forward. They didn't desire to leave. They didn't see it. And they died during the darkness, the plague of darkness. And my understanding of what that means is that, how is it that they didn't see? What does it mean they didn't desire? It's that, you know, when Moshe came and said to them, it's time, we're leaving, we're going, there was a disbelief on the part of many that they were like, wait a second, this is, you know, this is the greatest civilization that ever lived. There's no leaving here. You don't just extract yourself from here. But there's the suffering that we're experiencing, the intensity of our servitude. It's Mitzrayim. This is the greatest, you know, there's no leaving here. And insofar as they viewed it as deriving from this world experience, then the logic made no sense to be able to envision or hope for. Like, they just internally, something wasn't open to a vision beyond the circumstances. Whereas the other Yidden, as pained as they were by all the suffering, I mean, it was right in their faces. They were suffering moment to moment to moment, but they had some understanding that as much as this is a painful thing that we're being subjected to by these people, there's only one power, and if the emissary of that power is telling us that he's ready to stop the pain experience and take us to a new experience, then even though it looks to us like, you know, Mitzrayim is the source, we trust that there's something more. So really what happened was is that it's kind of like the elevator is coming all the time, but if you're not waiting by the elevator door, because you think that the action and the whole reality of things is out there somewhere in the floor, you know. Well, the elevator's coming and going, but you're out there trying to fix the things out there on the floor. But if you understand that the source of your experience is coming from this gift of thought, from the Almighty, so it makes sense to look in that direction, to stand there in the metaphor, to stand there by the elevator, and then the elevator shows up, and you, okay, I'll get on the elevator. To me, that's the power of this understanding. The difference between the Yidden that left Mitzrayim and the ones that didn't wasn't that the Yidden who left somehow worked out a way to get out. It was only the Almighty who got them out. So what did they accomplish? Well, they didn't get derailed. You know, it's a tremendous thing to stay in the presence of the Almighty and to continuously acknowledge the truth that there is no other source. It's not coming from my childhood, my chemistry, my this, my that, whatever it is. Not that, you know, like I don't, you know, whatever it might feel like for us in our own individual space, it sounds like it's coming from this world, all the things that we feel. And to stay loyal to the truth and to look in the direction of the source of the one source, that is the key role that we have in our fulfillment of our job. I mean, there'll be opportunities for us to take action and to intervene and to do things, but the main thing is to stay true to what is, to stand in truth, to know what's true, to know and understand what's not true, and to allow not to, you know, to, yeah, that's what comes to mind, you know, when I think of that, you know, the beautiful story you shared, Chaya, about, you know, having gone through a painful passage and then emerged. Anyone else?
Who Hello?
Else might have a, yeah.
Hi. I was reading a book recently by Avraham Baruch Friedman about relationships, and he said something that really speaks to something that I've heard you say a lot, the quote about what Shlomo HaMelech says, that when the Spirit comes to you, just kind of stand there.
Yeah, when the Kashtale Alecha Ruach HaMoshe, when the spirit of that ruler comes upon you, i.e. the Yetzer, Mekoimcha Al Tanach, don't leave your place.
Right. So he says, this is like a catchy way of putting it. You know, he reverses the common phrase. So the common phrase is, this Rabbi Friedman, so he reverses the phrase. And he said, you know, there's a common phrase, don't just stand there, do something. He says, don't just do something, stand there.
It's a nice way of putting it.
Right.
Don't just do something, stand there. Tremendous, tremendous accomplishment to do nothing and stand there at times.
At times, right, at times.
So, you know, I'll share something else that comes to mind as we're approaching the Yom HaDin in Rosh Hashanah, where our mission is to crown the Almighty King. You know, that's the opportunity of Rosh Hashanah and the entire days is to declare Him King. And the word Melech in Hebrew is related to the Hebrew word Nimlach. Nimlach is to consult. That there's such a thing as a Moshel. A Moshel is like a tyrant. That's why the verse says, when the spirit of that Moshel comes upon you, that's a ruler who rules with force and not a ruler that rules with benevolence of any kind, right? Not that the Yitzhahara is, obviously we know the Yitzhahara is a gift from the Almighty, but in terms of the interaction, we, you know, the experience is that the Moshe is a ruler who rules not necessarily with the consent and the interest of the one ruled, whereas the whole essence of a Melech is that it's a ruler who rules with the desire and the consent of the ones being ruled. And that's our goal on Rosh Hashanah, is to acknowledge we don't want any other rule. You know, we only want your wisdom, your reality, your will. That's all we want. And I guess, you know, there's so much, like Chai was talking about compassion, there's so much, when a person comes to an acceptance of what's true about our experience and the impersonal nature of the struggles that we encounter, there's so much room for acceptance. There's so much room for a real welcoming, a real embrace of the process of what we find ourselves in, of, you know, of the up and down nature of our consciousness, of the in and out understanding of how reality is working, you know. That is, I think, a part of the opportunity on Rosh Hashanah is to have the gratitude that the only reason why each of us is in this conversation right now is because we've been gifted with a perception of that truth. We've seen something that we didn't see before. We've seen something that we can't figure out with our intelligence and our personal power of focus. You know, we've seen something. And that gift allows us to set our burdens down at times. You know, it's what allows us to really embrace the Almighty's rule and not fight it. You know, it's incredible what a human being can see, how well suited we are for growth and design and wisdom when we're not resisting or trying to fight or trying to take matters in our own hands in a way that is not meant to be. It's just profound. When we align with our with His will, when we embrace and accept His will, and inclusive in that is the truth that we're talking about, the reality of how He made us moment, how He's showing us, what he's showing us or not showing us moment to moment. When we really embrace that, it's he's going to take us places. He is taking us places, but that's what these days are about. There are no days of the year that are more ripe for that understanding, for that expression of desire that we understand that. And really, you know, we've talked about this also in the past, is that prayer, the goal of prayer is that a person deepen the clarity that there's no other address. There's nobody, you know, prayer is the untangling process. It's the tangled experience is the experience of thinking of there's, you know, in a meaningful area of my life, there's seven things that I have to address, and they're all potential roadblocks, you know. And to the degree that we have an actual perception of there being a real power to contend with, that's tangling. That's where we get tangled up. And prayer is the opportunity to divest ourselves of that tangle. It's the opportunity to see and understand there is no other address. I'm not saying that there aren't people to interact with and to make an effort with, but they don't possess power in and of themselves. The principal of the school, the teacher, my child, the whatever, notwithstanding the necessity of making effort, but the clarity that goes behind that, there is no other power. There's no other address. There's no place to turn to other than one place. That's the opportunity of prayer. That's the opportunities of these days. And, you know, just think of to think of where and how our lives have moved forward in ways that, okay, we did what we did. We were interested in growth. We were interested in showing up on whatever level we could see. But to think of where and how we've seen new things that cannot be attributed to our exertions, to our personal intelligence, to just kind of appreciate the truth behind that. It's like all the more so I want to just bare myself and say, you've got a plan. And of course I'm ready to undertake. Of course I'm not looking to just passively walk into the new year and say, show me what's next, God, because it's all on you. But I can undertake something with, I can aspire, I can desire, I can pledge new things, knowing, like, the vista is different. The vista is different, knowing just how profound a resource I have behind me that is showing up. You know, it allows me to approach what I ask for, and he is waiting for us to ask for life. The whole point is to ask for life, to ask for tremendous opportunities and gifts, and to consider what it would be like to contribute to a world in which his vision is more realized. You know, there's a lot to undertake. It's not like there isn't. But the root of all of it is the yearning and the trust that he wants that as much as he wants that more than we do. Anyone else with a thought? About Rosh Hashanah, about these days, about something you're seeing? Okay, well, I'm not sure I have something else to add. So I think I'm going to take this opportunity to wish everyone listening, that you may merit to truly to accept the Almighty as King, to embrace the beautiful world in which He's placed us, and to accept the partnership that He's extending to us to contribute and make a beautiful world. And may you be signed and written and sealed in the Book of Life for a good, sweet year. And have a good Shabbos.